Welcome to an HBO podcast from the HBO Late Night series, Real Time with Bill Maher.
Start the clock.
An exciting day. Tomorrow, a rare event, Leap Day tomorrow. And the way the stock market is going, there's going to be a lot of leaping. Market lost $6 trillion this week. I know. Pretty soon that adds up to real money. Bloomberg is not even sure anymore he can buy the country. I mean, it's... And, of course, that's because of the coronavirus. Now, look, is this serious? Yes, it is. The CDC is now calling it the COVID-19, and you know a disease is serious when they give it a rap name. But panic? No. We should not panic, and it doesn't merit panic. First of all, we live in L.A. The air is so toxic, anything that comes out of anybody's mouth is killed immediately. It doesn't... Germs, viruses. But will life change? Yes, it will. You just have to take more precautions now. I mean, just assume everyone is infectious. The same warning they give contestants on The Bachelor. I tell you... One person in this country who was way ahead of this, Melania. When someone tries to touch her hand, boy, she slaps it away. She knows what's up. Now, fortunately, her husband, Donald Trump, is in charge. And when I say fortunately, I mean, oh, fuck. This would be a nice time, wouldn't it, to have a president who doesn't talk out of his ass and think with his dick and eat with his hands? But we don't have that. We don't have that. We have a president who thinks this coronavirus is a minor annoyance, like the common cold or the Constitution of the United States. One who appoints as the person to head up this massive medical emergency, Mike Pence. Who doesn't even believe in evolution? Really? It's like making Jared ambassador to Funky Town. No, we have one. We have a president who just keeps telling us crazy lies that contradict everything the CDC is saying. He says the virus is ending. They say, of course not. It's inevitable. It's going up. Who are you going to believe? Infectious disease experts or the guy who fucked Stormy Daniels without a condom? Yeah, because that's Trump's attitude. Can you blame him? His attitude is, I raw dog porn stars. I eat a diet that would gag a raccoon. I won an election where I got the fewest votes. Fuck you, science. Fuck you, math. That's his attitude. I commit crimes and my lawyers go to jail. Reality is for losers. He said yesterday, the virus, it's going to disappear. One day, like a miracle, it will just disappear. Really, Mr. President? Because just hoping... that it'll be gone. I've tried that with you and it doesn't work. So, listen. So, listen. We've known each other a long time, right? Right? We've known each other? Okay, so. I'm going to tell you my message. You're going to hear some scary things. And some of them are really going to be scary. Today it was in the news. In Hong Kong, they think a dog tested positive. They think it's just environmental contamination. But just in case, I told my two dogs, bark into your elbow. And do not drink out of the same toilet. But just please remember what the great Jimmy Breslin once said. The message of TV, he said, is stay inside and watch more TV. It is very important to remember all the other times that cable news was telling you that we were all going to die. SARS and MERS and Ebola and swine flu and bird flu and this flu and that flu. Please say it with me now. Flus will not replace us. Flus will not replace us. Thank you very much. We got a great show. Jane Clubb, Buck Sexton, and E.J. Dionne are here, and a little later we'll be speaking with author and columnist Nicholas Kristof. But first up, she is a professor of epidemiology. Oh, I knew I was going to fuck that one up. I had a real roll on it, too, didn't I? Like I knew. Professor of epidemiology at UCLA's Fielding School of Public Health and director of the Center for Global and Immigrant Health. Please welcome Dr. Anne Ramoyne. So much. Oh, we're not. I was gonna bow.
But we like see, to
I
was. Fist
I
bumps.
Told everybody. No, not even fist bumps. The Japanese had the right idea. We don't know where that hand has been.
That's. Exactly.
No, and I don't mean you in particular, but you know, you're okay, right?
As far as you know.
How comfy. But look, I mean, I said it a minute ago. Life will change. Right? And it should. First of all, you know what? I never liked the handshake anyway. I don't think it adds anything to anything, right? Anybody here you really care about touching, you don't shake hands with.
Well, you know, there are lots of other things you can do. Like I said, you could do the fist bump. You could do the Ebola elbow. Or you could just wave.
Yes.
Exactly. There are even studies now or projects where they're trying to have handshake-free zones in hospitals just for the very same reason that we don't want to be transmitting disease. And this was long before
right.
this new coronavirus came.
I was told that during the Spanish flu in 1918, they stopped people. Well, they tried to stop. They had a big campaign against spitting. People used to just hock a loogie whenever. Some still
better?
Do, but we don't. As a nation, we generally don't expectorate.
Correct.
Thank you.
So life is better post epidemic.
Let's talk about the Spanish flu
mm-hmm.
because it got my attention that they said about 2%
mm-hmm.
of the world died in that one, or who got it.
Right.
And that seems to be the same number they're saying now for this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I always heard the Spanish flu was a rough one. And obviously, if the numbers are the same, would you say this is a good comparison?
Well, it's not time yet to compare this to the flu, and not even the Spanish flu. This is a different kind of virus, and we're still learning a lot about it. I mean, it's always scary when you have a new pathogen jumping from
right.
animals into a human population
yes.
and starting to spread. And we just don't know enough about this disease yet to really make strong comparisons. Because when we talk about the Spanish flu, we think, you know, we can talk about it from a very long distance. And we know exactly how many cases there were.
Right.
We know now all about the epidemiology of the virus or of the disease. But back then, we didn't. And people were just as scared then.
But
as
if
they
it's
are
not
now.
A flu, what is it?
So it's a coronavirus. And a coronavirus is different from an influenza virus.
Hmm.
Coronaviruses are a large family of viruses. They also cause respiratory infections, mm-hmm. but most of them are in animals, not in humans.
Yes. What is it that humans will put anything in their mouth? Seriously, I mean, this started when someone ate a bat, and I was thinking, oh, these primitives. And I remember Ozzy Osbourne ate a bat before every show.
Well, it actually isn't coming directly from bats. And same thing with SARS or MERS. We think that these viruses originate in bats, and then they jump to another species with SARS. It was a civet cat. With MERS, it seemed to be a camel. And in this instance, we're not sure yet, but it seems like it might be a pangolin. And so it comes...
A what?
A pangolin, which is a very small small animal that it's actually the most trafficked animal in the world. Oh. They're eating it. It looks like an armadillo.
But they weren't eating the camel.
People were pumping these it? were in areas where people were using camels. They were it was different. Anyway, you bring up a really good point. These things often happen around wet markets, and these are open air markets where you have animals, and so you can imagine walking into these markets that happen everywhere in the world, but in particular in Asia and Africa, where you'll have bats in a cage, and then you'll have pangolins in a cage above it, or civet cats in another one, and so you're having all of these species all together stressed, and they're spreading disease to each other.
And it's amazing what the human body can ingest and be okay. Right?
It's true.
I mean, if you ever walk through, markets just in this country in certain ethnic Chinatown, I've seen, shit on sticks and animals hanging. It's like our digestive system is almost too strong. It can take so much that we'll just put any piece of shit in our mouth.
Well, I often, when I teach a class on epidemiology, I often use the example because I work on Ebola. It's another thing that I spend a lot of time working on. Good. And that is also a disease that crosses species from animals to humans.
Sure.
And people often talk about, people eat bats, and how could they eat bats? And I say, culturally, people eat all sorts of things. And most of the time, you're not getting a disease spilling over. I mean, people eat meat, but there's mad cow disease.
If you were the czar, the Mike Pence job, would you... crazy idea, you with your degrees at a title I can't even pronounce, but okay. So would you stop planes from overseas, from certain countries, from coming in here?
Well, I think, these kinds of draconian measures of stopping travel, they don't really work at the end of the day. I mean, listen, the virus is already here. We already know that it's here, and it's already spreading. And the problem is, when you really stop travel and you have all these travel bans, people find ways in, and then you can't track them, and then you don't know what's happening. And so, you have to be careful when you really start putting these rules in place that are supposed to stop people, and then people who really want to get in, they're going to find another way. Also, it has so many problems with trade and all these other diplomatic issues. It doesn't necessarily make that much of a difference.
Wow.
So there are better ways to be able to...
Can you get it twice?
That's a good question. For this particular coronavirus, we don't know. There are other coronaviruses where people have been able to be reinfected, but with this one, we don't know yet.
But don't you build up, isn't that the whole point, is that you get something or you get a vaccine for it and then you have the immunity? Why doesn't it work after one time?
Well, that just certain diseases do not provide immunity after the fact, and which is why you can keep getting them. Strep throat is another example. You could get that again, right? So right now we don't know. It's very possible that you could have immunity at least for a period of time with this coronavirus, but right now... Like so many things about this virus.
But you're very cheery about it. I like that. No, that's one reason I wanted to have you on. I learned this word once, catastrophizing, when you make things that are not a catastrophe into a catastrophe, and that isn't helpful. And we don't really, it's not even appropriate right now. Is that correct?
Right. No, you have to keep everything into perspective here.
Right.
And right now, we are learning what's happening. We do not have widespread transmission here in the United States. We're still trying to figure out...
Isn't that inevitable?
We're probably going to have a fair amount of spread here in the United States, but we don't know how much, and we don't know where, and it's not going to happen overnight either.
No, but what does happen if there are two... I mean, we only have a certain number of hospital beds, and we're not going to build one in a week like the Chinese.
Right.
Not that that was really a hospital. But I don't know if we could even put up a room with beds. We can't build housing for the homeless. So I don't have...
Well, you're bringing up...
I assume you're cheering that that's a bed. No housing for the homeless, great.
But you're bringing up a really good point.
What do we do if all the beds are filled and there's X thousands more people who need a respirator?
Right. Well, so first of all, what is going to happen is we're not going to see, like I said, you're not going to have this happen all overnight.
Right.
And we had had other bad flu seasons. You know, we've already had a pandemic here. We had the H1N1 pandemic in 2009. So we have hospitals prepared to a certain degree. We know what they need to do. They know what they need to do. People have been preparing for this. You know, you can set up makeshift hospitals as needed. But I think that this really brings up the important point about pandemic preparedness and how important it is to be prepared. And the problem has been is there hasn't been good funding for this in a long time.
And
in fact,
cut
ever.
It now more.
But no administration has been good at funding pandemic preparedness.
Okay, can I ask you, it's a semi-political question, but it is a political show. Bernie Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people campaign for president, it's grueling. They always get sick, as you might imagine. They're in planes all day with that crappy air recirculating, and you're run down. Plus, he's 78.
Mm-hmm.
He just had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
He showed this picture. He's always in crowds, touching a lot of people. What's the over-under on him making it to election? I mean, this does not... This honestly seems like a perfect storm for him not...
Well, you know, the disease is definitely... people don't have as successful
Now you're outcomes. Not so cheery, are you?
They don't have as successful outcomes in people that are older or who have comorbidities.
If you love Bernie, don't touch him, right?
Well, you know,
seriously,
I would bet you that
don't
Bernie...
Don't touch Bernie.
I would bet you that Bernie is doing what everybody else should be doing right now, which is washing your hands regularly, not touching your face.
I don't know if the I go into the crowd and touch a million people think can survive this. Or, like I said, life will change.
Well, life
and
will
that's,
change.
Yes, and that's okay.
And it is, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I would think, my theory, you have to be good about how you take care of yourself. Your best line of defense, is it not your own immune system? Germs, pathogens are ubiquitous. You can't become Howard Hughes locked in an airtight room pissing into jars. That's the only other alternative.
Right.
I mean, people who put hand sanitizer all over their hands all day, I've had more than one very smart doctor tell me that destroys the pH on the skin, makes it more permeable. You have to have a good immune system. Stop eating sugar. Wouldn't that be a great start?
Well, you know, there are so many things that you can be doing. And sure, sugar can cause inflammation like so many other things. Smoking
causes inflammation. Isn't it the worst thing for your immune system is sugar?
There are so many things that are bad for your immune system.
But wouldn't sugar be number one?
sugar is on the list of the top things that you should probably decrease. but you know, there you know, smoking is also bad for you.
Of course, smoking,
and people should exercise more, and they should eat well in general. And I think that that's really important. And so I agree with you, being healthy and doing everything you can to make sure you are healthy, including maybe eating less sugar, would be a good thing to do.
No sugar. But finally, whatever it is, they always end, don't they?
They do.
Whatever it will end. It runs its course and then it ends.
Well, I mean, most of these viruses will disappear, although there are some instances where they become endemic.
Let's end on that. Let's say they always. All right. Thank you, Doctor. I am bowing to you. Let's meet our family. Let's pretend it always ends.
It's much better to live in reality.
Come on. All right. He is the New York Times bestselling author of the new book, Code Red, How Progressives and Moderates Can Unite to Save Our Country, E.J. Dionne. Great to see you back here, E.J. All right. She is the chair of the Nebraska Democratic Party and author of Harvest the Vote, How Democrats Can Win Again in Rural America, Jane Klebb. Jane, how you doing? And he is a former CIA officer and is now the nationally syndicated host of the Buck Sexton Show. Buck Sexton back with us. Buck, how you doing? Okay. So Donald Trump had a rally a few hours ago. He is calling the coronavirus their new hoax. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to look on the bright side of this and say that I think the coronavirus is going to change people's views of Donald Trump finally. Not for the better.
So... There are two simultaneous conversations that are happening from the president's side and really across the country. One of them is, this is one of the very few issues out there, up there with foreign military invasion, right, where everybody goes, this is something we have to deal with. I was at Long Island Railroad, JFK yesterday, people have got the masks on. Everyone's freaked out, markets are tanking, and nobody wants this to be a pandemic. The administration doesn't want it to be a pandemic. So all of our interests are aligned. That said, there are people who, even at this stage, we haven't had a single fatality on U.S. soil, don't know the extent of the problem. There are people who are trying to score political points and say things like Chuck Schumer said the administration has no plan for this. And that's just not true of any administration.
Okay, but he is lying his ass off about it. Do you really not have... Donald Trump has, like, one go-to, which is deny, which works. You know, if someone accuses you of sexual assault, you can say they're not my type. If somebody says, accuses you of sexual, I didn't know him, and then they have 1,000 pictures of them together.
Wait a second.
You would admit he lies his ass off. And that's part of the charm. I get it, because government is for trolling and making liberals cry their liberal tears. But that's not so funny now, is it? Do you really have no buyer's remorse with a guy who is lying, who says we're going to have a vaccine soon when
he's
there isn't?
He's trying to
But wait, he said there's going to be a vaccine, but there isn't.
Well, there will be a vaccine
soon.
In 12 to 18 months.
That's not what he said.
First of all, our government is supposed to keep us healthy and safe, right? And so for me, this is an exclamation point about how Donald Trump has not been running a government that is keeping us healthy and safe. Whether it's the meatpacking plants where they have increased the production line so you can, you know, essentially slaughter as many animals as you want and there's no risk to the workers' health on the line. Or it means that the plant workers are now the one inspecting our meat rather than government inspecting the meat. This is all happening under President Trump. And
well,
so
that
I hope it's the exclamation point.
Okay. That was going on before President Trump.
But, you know...
Not the increase of...
I mean, the reason I think your theory might be right is in a time like this, you want a president who, when he talks to you, you have some confidence that he's telling the truth. If he lies about how often he plays golf or his crowd size when the pictures are right there, how can you trust what he says about this? And you need trust in the White House. But the other is, you want an administration that actually believes that sometimes experts are to be called on to solve a problem. And, you know, Bill Cohen... The former Republican senator and Secretary of Defense, once said, government is the enemy until you need a friend, and experts are nasty elitists until you need somebody who knows what they're talking about to help you solve a problem. And this administration like experts or government.
A clip. This is John Kennedy. He is not that John Kennedy. He is the Republican senator from Louisiana. He's a Republican, and he's been a big defender of Donald Trump. Here he is talking to our acting head of Homeland Security. I didn't even know the guy's name because these temps come through the... I mean, I'm just...
They're permanently acting.
I'm surprised it wasn't Ivanka's wedding planner, quite frankly. But this is a Republican senator talking to this man, watch this, about the virus.
And your job is to keep us safe. But you can't tell us how many your models are anticipating.
No, Senator. Again, I would defer you to the Health and Human Services for that.
Okay. CDC. Don't you think you ought to check on that?
We will.
As the head of Homeland Security? How is it transmitted?
A variety of different ways, Senator.
Tell me what they are, Bush.
Again, human to human is what we've primarily seen.
Well, obviously human to human. How?
You're asking me a number of medical questions that
I'm asking
CDC
you questions
and HHS
because you're Secretary of
are
the Department
focusing on.
Of Homeland Security, and you're supposed to keep us safe.
Okay. That's a Republican, Senator. Does that guy make you feel safe, Buck?
Well, there's a lot of information that you heard from the expert before that they're still figuring out about, you know, how transmissible is it, what the fatality... You can't really know the mortality rate
without...
So
you don't share John Kennedy's feelings on that?
No, what I'm saying is that everyone has the same feeling here, which is that they want the best response possible from the government. The only people that seem to be rooting for failure are people...
We're not rooting for failure. We're rooting for health. We're rooting for competence.
And there literally hasn't been a single Democrat who's gone on TV saying, oh, my God, God, this is such a crisis. We're all melting. You guys keep on saying that. We're saying that, but none of us have. Instead, we have President Trump who slash and burns our government to carry the mantra of the Republicans that we don't need the government.
This is not about the... I mean, this is like Trump is terrible, therefore he's bad at this, and that's actually not talking about
the response. No, because he's been denying it.
You don't even believe this bullshit you're saying. This is I'm looking into your eyes.
Yes.
This is a crisis. This is a serious crisis, and the guy is a liar who is putting into place people who are not competent to handle something like this.
Do you think that he wants zero deaths from this? Do you think he wants zero deaths from the U.S. soil?
He'll
do everything in his
power to do that? What he cares about is the stock market. That's what he said.
I mean,
at some point, like, there's just a derangement where the president's interests are aligned here. If he wants to get reelected, he's going to do the best job he can on this, no matter how terrible anybody here thinks he is.
But
here's,
Buck, I almost admire you because somebody who tries to do the impossible should be admired. But trying to argue that this president is dealing with this in any other way but to protect himself, not protect the country. Why did he tell the Chinese...
Why
did he say the Chinese are doing a great job here? Why didn't he intervene there
Why did he cut off flights from China when some experts initially said that that was a bad idea? Now they're saying
it was
probably
a good
idea.
And why don't we have more testing kits all across our country, especially in our rural communities?
Or masks. You know what? It's so interesting. You know, in World War II, as soon as the war started, they closed down all the car factories. And in weeks, they were making bomber planes and tanks. We can't, in this country, make masks. Nobody can get a mask because they're sold out on Amazon and everywhere else.
Well, experts will also say that the masks aren't as effective at preventing the spread for some people as they think.
You know, for healthcare workers, yes. That doctors actually have testing kits rather than have to go through the CDC to get a test.
I mean, look, the testing kits, money has gone out. New York City is actually trying to come up with their own right now.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen because it is going to get worse. And then instead of fixing the problem, your president is going to sulk, blame, and further divide. I mean, I'm shocked that we can't even come together on this. I thought tribalism would end at a thing like this. I think if we were attacked by Martians...
What is the part of his response that is wrong, though? What has he done so far in terms of action
Did you miss the first 20 minutes of the show? He told lies. He lied to us. He said lies. He said disease is going away, and it's not going away. He said the vaccine is coming soon, and it's not. He told...
It is a record for the vaccine progression. That's actually... a record in terms of how fast it goes.
Let me ask another question. I'm not going to pursue this anymore. There's going to be layoffs. Lots of them. 13% of the people today, it was reported. This is early on in this crisis, are not flying anymore. They've closed schools overseas. I mean, it's just going to... People are not going to go to restaurants. They're not... I'm afraid of who they're going to put their hands in my salad now. I've had food poisoning. It's no... Okay, what's going to happen? There are people not going to go to restaurants. Then those people are going to get laid off. And we know half this country does not have any savings.
Or health care. So if somebody's sick, if they don't have health care, then what are they supposed to do?
What happens then? When there's massive layoffs, people have no money, and there's not enough health care. What happens then?
Australia.
I'm saying, you don't think that's going to happen? Layoffs? We just lost $6 trillion in a week?
There's definitely fear of a recession right now, for sure. There's no question about that. People are really concerned. But that also goes to the government. You know, the Fed's not talking about taking action. No one's asleep at the wheel on this. I think they understand the implications. I know that's so funny, but I also...
But it is. It's ridiculous. Because it's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. I mean, we don't even know how bad the cases are going to be in this country.
Right.
We don't know if the market's going to rebound.
But that's the point. Australia has a worst-case scenario plan out there that the public can now read. Where's our worst-case scenario? They said that their worst-case scenario was that 40% of their workforce...
Here's some facts on the cuts. Trump cut the defense fighting budgets of four agencies, CDC, National Security Council. He cut their entire global security health unit. Wait a second. Homeland Security. That's that moron we just saw. Health and Human Services. The CDC used to operate in 49 countries to shut down this shit before it started. China was one of them.
Yeah, but Trump.
Now it's not.
Congress sets budgets, not the president. So
no,
the president
but these
has
are his budgets.
This is how government works. Congress does not act. Congress is the one that's in charge of this, not the president of the United States.
The president is proposing cuts that, in many cases, Congress rescinded. Thank God.
Right.
But these cuts speak to a whole attitude toward government itself, as if all these things government does are useless. I hope in this course of this crisis, we go back and play clips of what Donald Trump said about President Obama's handling of Ebola. And when you go back to look at an administration, again, that took science seriously, that took what government could do seriously, they actually did an exceptional job on Ebola, not only here, but overseas. Because if you don't help people overseas to contain this, it's going to come here.
We keep talking about, like, the lack of expertise. I mean, Dr. Anthony Fauci, NIH, the people that are running the CDC, these are careerists who...
He was told he couldn't talk.
Right. This is not accurate. Vice President Pence was like, we just want to have a coordinated message. Let's actually talk before we talk. That's all that he said.
Fauci says something that might be true that contradicts what the administration
We've already seen that. Yes. Yeah.
Nebraska is one of the states that they're actually bringing some of these folks to, right? Because we have an expert in University of Nebraska Medical Center. And they were saying that they didn't have any funding. They weren't even being asked to prepare things. So that's a problem. Just until a couple days ago, they were the ones that were leading on the Ebola. Okay. So there's a problem when don't have a leader leading.
I'm going to bring out Nick in 2 seconds. I just want to quote two things. The mayor from Jaws. Said, it's a beautiful day. The beaches are open and people are having a wonderful time.
Yeah, that's great.
Amity is a summer town. We need summer dollars. And Trump said, the coronavirus is very much under control. Stock market's starting to look very good to me. Just saying. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for The New York Times, who, with his wife, Cheryl Wudunn, co-authored the book Tightrope Americans Reaching for Hope. Nicholas Kristof is over here. Nick. How are you, sir? You don't miss the handshake, do you? No. Okay, thank you. Okay, so listen, we'll get back to this subject, but I want to talk about your book first because it's a fantastic book. And
thank you.
If we ever get past this crisis, and we will have to contend with the fact that the same old things that have been making people die will still be making people die. And you zero in on what you call, I think, deaths of despair in this country. What are we talking about when you say deaths of despair?
So we're talking about deaths from drugs, alcohol, and suicide, which every 2 weeks kill more Americans than died in the entire Afghan and Iraq wars. And it's the story of my hometown. A quarter of the kids on my old school bus.
Where is that? Died.
It's in Yamhill, Oregon, right where the Willamette Valley goes into the coastal range.
Of course, I know it well. The Yamhill Valley, many a
come visit.
Summers out there. Okay. So, you're saying typical of rural America? This is very rural area?
It's kind of a Great Depression that has struck parts of America, but not geographically, but demographically. It is a crisis that has hit working class America.
So these people would seem to be the ideal Bernie Sanders voters. They would seem to be more ripe for a political revolution than anybody. But when you look at the political map, those areas are always red. Why do you think
so? The white working class is socially very conservative. Economically, though, they tend to be actually much more liberal. And so, look, if they go in the voting booth and they are thinking about abortion, guns, then they will vote for a Republican. But Democrats have to fight for those votes. And if they are thinking about raising the minimum wage, if they are thinking about parental leave, increasingly, if they are thinking about health care, about expanding Medicaid, then there is a fighting chance to have them vote Democratic.
Hmm. So what our drug war has been a massive failure.
It's one of the worst policy failures in America in the last 50
years. And bipartisan.
Absolutely.
It's gone on for Bloomberg. It hates pot.
I mean, it goes way back earlier than that, but yeah.
Yeah, but really, yeah. I mean, a guy is supposed to be so smart about so many things, you know. Okay, so what does a good drug policy look like?
So a good drug policy, I mean, we actually have a good comparison. In the 1990s, the U.S. and Portugal were both wrestling with the heroin problem.
Right.
They both looked at what to do. The U.S. doubled down on a law enforcement toolbox. And Portugal, meanwhile, convened a panel and decriminalized drug possession, even heroin, cocaine. But above all, what they used was the public health toolbox, encouraging people to providing treatment. And the upshot is that the number of heroin users in Portugal has dropped by 2/3. Portugal now has the lowest drug overdose rate in Western Europe. And meanwhile, we lost 68,000 Americans last year.
Wow. And I know I'm always the bad guy when I bring this up, but I saw it in the paper yesterday, obesity. The school of, when is it? The Harvard, Chan School of Public Health at Harvard says in 10 years, not that it's not bad now, half the country in 2030 will be obese, a quarter will be severely obese. 40,000 deaths a month from obesity, and that is a big problem.
Absolutely.
We're talking about in the areas you're talking about.
Absolutely, it's enormous, but it's, you can't just look at it the moment that somebody is reaching for some potato chips. It's very much a reflection of this miasma of depression that has struck much right. of the country. And when people lose jobs, lose good, well-paying jobs, then they self-medicate with methamphetamine, they self-medicate right. with alcohol, they also
and
self-medicate
food.
with soda and potato chips. And so, you know, there's no silver bullet, but there are silver buckshot. And you can address that in part by providing better paying jobs and supporting education in these areas. That helps to address so many of these problems together.
I heard a lot about how the farmers were going to turn on Trump. You must know a lot about this, right?
Okay.
But because of the trade war, and of course we know that he wrote a lot of checks to them to cover
yeah.
that, which is
$35 billion, I think,
of course.
Yeah.
But 83% is this, wow, that is a lot of voters, farmers who are, that they surveyed, pro-Trump. That's a huge number. Why can't the Democrats do a little better? I'm not asking for the world, but 83%, you can't win more than 17%?
Well, they can if they actually started to go to these rural communities once again. So rural voters used to be with Democrats. We used to have Democrats elected
right.
in South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, Kansas, et cetera, because we used to stand with them when they were hurting. So when the farm crisis happened, Democrats were there on the tractors, Jesse Jackson included, saying that we need to unite the eaters and the feeders if we're going to have real economic and land justice in our country. And Democrats, when was the last time you saw a Democrat when we had a historic flooding in Nebraska? Not a single Democratic presidential candidate came to Nebraska or Iowa when they had flooding as well. So there is real problems that us as a party have completely abandoned these communities. And so why should they vote
for us? Is that what you find? They just don't show up? The Democrats?
I think that's fair. So Kansas now has a Democratic governor. And it's, for 50 years, basically, America was engaged in this project of lowering taxes and lowering investment in human capital. And finally, Kansas Republicans rebelled and said, raise our taxes because you've hurt our schools too much.
Of course.
And I wonder if that won't be remembered as some kind of a turning point in this long era that may lead to renewed investment in American human capital in ways that would help address the problems in Yamhill and Kansas and Nebraska and in so many other places.
And I think that's completely right. And I think it goes to one of the things I write about in the book is Kansas. And as an example of the radicalization of the Republican Party over the last 20 years, where the governor said, if we slash these taxes, cut this spending, cut the schools, the economy will boom. The economy didn't boom. And a lot of middle-class Republicans who actually wanted their kids to go to good public schools said, wait a minute, this program is terrible. And so it was actually repealed in the state legislature by votes from all the Democrats and a bunch of Republicans who said, we can't do this anymore. And when the Democrat won, it was those moderate Republicans who actually many moderate Republicans supported the Democrat.
Yeah. And you do see whiskers of Democrats emerging in other states. You know, Utah and Idaho passed Medicaid expansion.
So did Nebraska.
So did Nebraska.
But the debates are... Am I wrong about
good
this?
For you.
The debates, like the one we had Tuesday, are not helping
the
Democrats.
No,
depends on who you want to help. It's helping Trump, for sure.
The Republican Party
really
could
bad.
Put that up
and
as a political ad themselves.
Really bad.
And if I may... I'm sorry, Bill.
No, please.
I was just going to say, I mean, in response to the Republican Party getting more radical over 20 years, I mean, the Democratic Party... I just read the New York Times 2 days ago that effectively the DNC establishment is like, all right, Bernie's actually crazy. We can't really do this.
That's not true. That's
excuse me. I'm just reporting. I'm just telling you what was reported in the New York Times.
You're
it's
right.
Not my opinion.
It's interesting.
And he's a socialist. And
it's interesting the hypocrisy here. First, it was, hey, you Bernie bros, you got to get on board this time, whoever the nominee is. Now that the nominee is Bernie.
That's right.
And they're like, we got to stop him. Wait, I thought you said whoever the nominee is.
Consultant class, and there's all these people that I think are still kind of hoping Hillary. She's got a podcast coming out that she's somehow going to get involved
here. First of all, it is true that some parts of the Democratic establishment don't like Bernie Sanders and that he makes them very uncomfortable. That's true. And I think it's okay that the Democratic Party is uncomfortable right now. We have a transformation that we need to do within our party. We have two wings, right? And you need both wings to fly. You need the progressives and the moderates. I always say you need all shades of blue. And so it is clear that as Democrats, for the past 10 years, we've been talking about this rising American electorate, that it's younger, that it's going to be more diverse, that it's women,
right.
That they're going to be more progressive. Guess what? They're here. And guess what? They want Bernie Sanders. So we, as the Democratic Party, have to bring everybody together.
I like this idea. Let's get more of this.
The first line of my book, bless you for that many shades of blue, is will progressives and moderates feud while America burns. And if you take the earlier part of the conversation, do they really want to say that these differences between Medicare for all or a public option, when they all want to cover all Americans to get decent health care, are those so important that you're going to have a debate like that and the country sort of turns around and reelects this president who, for all the reasons you said in the first part of the show, presents a real crisis to Americans?
Yeah. And that's right.
I think there's a point related to that, and I bet this will resonate in Nebraska, that right now politics are so polarized that there are an awful lot of Democrats who see every Trump voter in 2016 as a racist and a bigot. And that is not clarifying, and that is not helpful
to
winning those voters.
This is absolutely true, by the way, and it's one of the reasons why there were some Democrat candidates that actually started resonating early on with some Republicans. People on the right have a fondness for Tulsi Gabbard. They like Andrew Yang. They like people that are at least willing to go. I mean, some of the Democrats are such wimps, you can't even get them to go on Fox News. You want to be president of the United States? This is absurd.
The latest Axios poll has Bernie losing to Trump, but closer than all the other Democrats, 47 to 15 nationally. He beats him in Pennsylvania by 4. Look, all these pundits who I hear say things like, well, Bernie will lose 45 states. Shut the fuck up. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You never know. We never know. You're the same people who said Trump wouldn't even get the nomination. You don't know. What we don't know is Bernie needs a revolution to show up. He needs people who have never voted before. Yep. Now, they are not showing up in those numbers in the primary, but we don't know. But now, since Trump, I think, is not going to leave anyway, might as well run Bernie. He's not. And by the way, when the virus gets bad, he's going to declare martial law. Watch that.
Oh, my God.
That could happen. That could totally happen.
Your point about people being dismissive about Bernie, I even tell people on my side on the right this, did we forget 2016? You had this fractured establishment field on the right. You had Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and everyone kept saying, can't be Donald Trump. And then all of a sudden it was Donald Trump. The establishment, by the way, did kind of reject him for a long time up to the convention. And now, obviously, we know how it went from there. There are parallels with Bernie Sanders' rise now and Donald Trump's rise in 2016.
I love that Republicans are saying, we really want to defend Bernie Sanders against this Democratic establishment. And the day after he's nominated, he is a horrible socialist who will endanger the country. They either believe one thing or the other, but I don't know if you're trying to
believe in fair
Democrats.
Believe in fair process.
Fair process. Well, then why don't you vote for there's something called the, I lost it now. The Duty to Report Act. This is require candidates for federal office and their campaigns to report any contacts with foreign governments to the FBI. Seems simple enough. Even 75% of Republicans are for it. Mitch McConnell won't let it come to the floor. Why not? Duty to report act. Seems
campaigns have contact with foreign governments, I mean, foreign officials all the time. That happens.
This is
there's
like
conversations
insane.
That constantly
well,
happen.
This just says, well, first of all, that
have to
is
be nefarious,
debatable.
What's the judgment
but it just says you got to report it to the FBI. Why fight that?
Well, again, it's because there's all these contacts, and there'll be a discussion about whether or not it's a nefarious campaigns talk to foreigners. This does happen.
Or the fact that Trump still doesn't really admit that Russia has meddled in our elections and that they're still meddling in our elections.
Was there Russian collusion?
Just clarify one thing.
Well, first of all, yes.
Yes, they talk to foreigners.
Plenty of it.
So what's wrong with saying they should report that? I don't see what—that doesn't answer the problem.
Well,
let them talk to foreigners, sure, but tell the FBI, especially if that foreigner is offering you help in your election.
Well, I mean, Mitch McConnell would also say that just passing this law, I mean, it's all meant to be from Democrats to slap in the face of Trump. It's ridiculous. Of course, anybody who is a patriot would say, hold on a second, if you're trying to get me to do something illegal in an election and you're a foreigner, we will not do this.
So why didn't Trump report it?
It's like the Mueller report never happened.
The Mueller report did happen, but he shit the bed. Mueller did a horrible job. Someday liberals will understand that. He did a horrible job.
Weissman did a horrible job, really. Mueller was mostly a figurehead, as we saw from the interview that he did.
Okay. This week, ABC News suspended David Wright. You'll like this.
I'm going to surprise you on this one.
Why?
I don't want to get into
the story. I won't tell the story. I remember him on the news. He looked like a very good reporter. Somebody came up to him. It was actually that guy from Project Veritas.
Yes, it was.
Those people who dress as pimps and, you know, get the receptionist to admit she's a Democrat at Planned Parenthood. They're so clever. Anyway, so he didn't know who was talking to, and they got him on tape. And he admitted that the network news is shit, basically. And he said, with Trump, we're interested in three things: the outrage of the day, the investigation, and the palace intrigue. But we don't really cover the guy. We don't hold him to account, and we also don't give him credit for what things he does do. That's a guy off the record when the cameras weren't rolling talking about the media.
I don't like...
Disgust.
I don't like people doing this to people, especially it's happened. I disagree with James.
Good for you, Buck.
I'm just saying, I don't like... Finally! I think that when someone's off the clock and they're talking about the boss and to put them on camera, I mean, unless it's somebody very high up the top of the mouthpiece. But on the ABC side of it, I mean, why is ABC taking this action against him for just...
Credibility to Project Veritas, right? So they go around the country, and we knew that they were in the bar. I was in the same bar that this all happened in. So I was talking to other state party chairs. Yes, because these guys with like beards and hats were like asking me all these ridiculous.
Right?
No, of course not. But you know how to start to identify these people when you're in the business for a while. And so they had ball caps on, and they're all bearded. And I said, so you know, they started asking me all these weird questions about Bernie, etc. And so I said, so are you with the media? Because it was all media and state party people in the room. And they said, no. We're just here because we think it's really fun to take a guy's trip to observe the New Hampshire political process. And I was like,
it's not a great cover story.
It is easy to make fun of them. They deserve it. I mean, that debate, the fact that we're in the middle of this coronavirus problem, to say the least, plus the stock market, they didn't ask a question about that. But the first one was about a saucy joke that Bloomberg told in 1980. Please.
Anyway, everyone pretty much agreed that debate, including
yes.
I mean, they
couldn't
get it over
fast enough.
But
the media does not
help.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, panel. It's time for new rules now. We're still doing new rules here in the time of the plague. Okay, new rule. If your trial involves long, disgusting descriptions of you showing women your deformed genitalia, don't use a walker with green fuzzy balls. New rule, don't be an asshole. If this little girl thinks she just met Barney the dinosaur, let her think she just met Barney the dinosaur. New rule, the planet Earth has to give us a little credit. We tried. Yeah, we still burn coal and eat meat and drive SUVs and buy shit we don't need, but at least we don't just throw out plastic shopping bags anymore. We shove them under the sink for a year and then we throw them out. New rule, now that I have to honk my horn every time a red light turns green because drivers are looking at their phones, someone must invent a traffic light that has a honk built into it when it turns green.
That's a good idea.
I know this is L.A., and by law, people must check their phones at every light, but let me save us all some time. Yes, that is a text from your agent, and no, you didn't get the part. Now go! New rule to the people who engage in the fad of foraging, where you go out and gather weeds and other wild plants and eat them. You go ahead. I'll catch up. No. It looks delicious. You enjoy. It's just that I just saw my dog pee there. And finally, new rule, Americans need to find a better way to say, I disagree with your position, than I'm going to kill you. It's one of the few things the left and the right have in common now. Adam Schiff and Chuck Schumer received death threats for impeaching Trump, and Susan Collins got death threats for not impeaching him. A guy named Salvatore Lippa was arrested last week for calling Schiff's office and saying, I dare you to come to New York because I will put a bullet in your fucking forehead. And then he went back to the bar and started screaming, how come women don't like nice guys? Last week, some Bernie bros got very angry at the Culinary Union in Nevada for preferring their own current health care plan to Bernie's Medicare for All. And as we know, the price for advocating for an alternative health care plan is death. Except these are people on your own team, fellow workers, fellow Democrats with a slightly different idea, who you want to kill. This is what was so frightening to Karamo Brown, one of the stars on Queer Eye, who got death threats after saying he planned to be nice to Republican Sean Spencer on Dancing with the Stars. Mr. Brown said, the minute that my son started getting death threats was the worst moment for me because a lot of it wasn't coming from the other side. It was coming from my own side. His own side. Death threats from liberals to children. Over this? Why don't they just make an app for death threats? You could call it Ender. Look, I'm not saying there's no place for blind bloodlust, like in the Bible, or when they run out of the chicken sandwich at Popeyes. But everything? A singer who wore her support for Trump proudly to the Grammys got death threats. Gayle King got death threats for asking a too-soon question about Kobe Bryant. Ilhan Omar gets death threats for being an immigrant, and death threats went out to a woman who wrote a pro-immigrant book because she wasn't actually an immigrant. The Ukraine whistleblower got death threats, and nobody even knew who it was. They just sent open letters to whom it may concern, I'm going to kill you. This is what happens when you let cancel culture spin out of control. It's the same attitude. Just take it a little further. We take your livelihood. Let's just go ahead and take your life. Because all the geniuses in this country are so 1,000,000% sure they're right about everything that it's always just my way or the die way. You know, Trump may want to be a dictator, but he is hardly alone. A lot of people in this country love to say, off with their head. Don't like that thing you purchased? Threaten to burn down the factory. Don't agree with someone who won the Oscar? Tell them you're going to find where they live and slit their throat. Don't like the call the ref made at your kid's soccer game? Send him a picture of you brandishing an axe. When did Americans become the fatwa people? Every minor dispute has to go from zero to Mel Gibson in 3 seconds? Did you know that the new pop sensation Billie Eilish spent her big night at the Grammys apologizing for winning? Yeah, because her overriding emotion wasn't pride. It was fear that superfans of rival pop stars would attack her. Oh, if only we had this kind of passion for something that mattered in this country. Billie Eilish kept winning all night, and she kept saying things like, no, And please don't let it be me. And all the other artists in this category. I know your fans are going to talk shit about me for years because of this. Imagine being 18, winning 5 Grammys, and all you could think of is, oh, shit, they know where I live. You know things are out of control when even potheads are issuing death threats. Yeah. Reporter Alex Berenson recently cited a link between weed legalization and a rise in violent crime, and pro-cannabis activists wanted his head on a pike. Let me tell you, if you're a stoner and you want to kill someone, you might consider switching from sativa to indica. All right. That's our show. I'll be at the Mirage in Vegas March 13th and 14th, at the Fox in Atlanta March 28th, at the Taft in Cincinnati March 29th. I want to thank E.J. Dionne, Jane Clem, Buck Sexton, Nicholas Kristof, and Dr. Anne Ramon. Ramon. Stay tuned for Overtime.
Catch all new episodes of Real Time with Bill Maher every Friday night at 10, or watch him anytime on HBO On Demand. For more information, log on to HBO.com.